ago, I gave a sermonette. It was on the prophecy in Daniel. It talks about knowledge running to and fro. It's amazing the world that we live in. This world where information just seems to be all over the place. We have more and more information at our disposal. Today I want to talk about one part of that information. I want to talk about fake news. Fake news. Mr. Menzel tells me we might be in jeopardy of losing our 501(c). For those that don't know, that's a tax from the IRS classification, right? Well, what is fake news? Let me just start out. Fake news is a type of hoax or a deliberate spread of misinformation, via a traditional news media or via social media, with the intent to mislead or in order to gain financially or politically. It often employs eye-catching headlines, entirely fabricated news stories in order to increase readership or online sharing. Profit is made in a similar fashion to clickbait. Clickbait's a buzzword that the young people, I'm sure, all know. It's those things that click here. Just click here and we're going to tell you something you're just dying to know all about, right? It relies on ad revenue to generate, regardless of the veracity of the published stories. Over and above just out-and-out false lies and misinformation, there's another type of false news as well, or fake news, and that is related to propaganda. It doesn't have to be just an out-and-out lie. It also could be a form of propaganda. Propaganda is the information, especially of a bias or misleading nature, used to promote a political cause or a point of view. Propaganda is often associated with the psychological mechanisms of influencing or altering the behavior or the attitude of the population toward a specific cause. And we see both the out-and-out misrepresentation of information, just false stories being presented, and we see sometimes the subtle twists, the headline that is biased one direction or another that's out there. So today I want to take a look at this fake news, look a little bit about its history, its impact on us as Christians, and what we can do to protect ourselves from that impact. So where does it come from? Let's start off, where does fake news come from? Obviously the answer is everywhere. And fake news comes from everywhere. There's a recent study done, which I will quote here. It says, much of the fake news during from the 2016 presidential election was traced to Macedonia, specifically a town called Veles. It's a town of about 50,000 in the middle of the country with a high unemployment, the average annual wage of less than $5,000 a year. The income of the fake news was characterized by NBC News as a gold rush. Adults supported the income, saying that they were happy their youths were working. The mayor of this small town was not only not bothered by their actions, but was not against, because it was not against the law, and the money was taxable. That was further supported by a couple others. So we know it came from a lot of foreign countries. A lot of fake news can be traced back much further, though, in history. It's not just 2016. It's not a current thing. It goes back much, much further. There are amazing numbers, amazing stories in history of fake news, just absolutely amazing stories. One of them was a fake news story that can be traced back to the 8th century, so the 700s, called the Donation of Constantine. And apparently the Roman Catholic Church used this story, and it was complete with documents and a painting of the time, of Constantine transferring authority over Rome to the Pope and the western parts of the Roman Empire to the Pope. This was particularly popular during the 13th century and again supported the claims of the political authority of the papacy. So we have a history of the Catholic Church actually trying to use some fake news for political gain. One of the earliest instances of fake news in modern times was called the Great Moon Hoax. The Great Moon Hoax from 1835. Apparently, the New York Sun published an article about a real-life astronomer and a made-up colleague who, according to the hoax, observed a bizarre form of life on the moon. The fictionalized article successfully attracted many new subscribers, and the paper didn't even suffer after they came clean. They told the truth. Amazing stories of of stuff. Unethical journalistic practices in the print media have been around for hundreds of years, even before the advent of the internet. Yellow journalism, reporting from a standard which was devoid of morals, was pervasive during the time period known as the Gilded Age. And the unethical journalist would engage in fraud by fabricating stories, interviews, made-up names for scholars. During the 1890s, the spread of this unethical news sparked violence and conflicts. And here's a name that's going to, this always surprises me when I read this. Both Joseph Pulitzer, of the famed Pulitzer Prize, right, and William Randolph Hearst created yellow journalism in order to increase profits and help lead to misunderstandings, which became partially responsible for the outset of the Spanish-American War in 1898. Pulitzer, it says, was a Hungarian newspaper publisher, and he introduced the techniques of yellow journalism to the newspaper he acquired in the 1880s and became a leading figure of the Democratic Party and was elected congressman from New York. And he had to leave Congress because his newspaper business took off so much because of the lies that he was telling. It just generated tons and tons of revenue. In fact, I didn't print it out here, but the revenue of the newspaper that he purchased, or the subscribership went from like 50,000 to 600,000 because of his yellow journalism techniques. He was able to really build an empire. One of the really famous stories of fake news that I'd never heard of until I began looking at this was from 1883. There was a gentleman named Moses Shapira. If you've never heard of him, I'd never heard of Moses Shapira either. Moses Shapira was in the Palestinian area, in the Jerusalem area, at the time the Dead Sea Scrolls and the Dead Sea stuff started to get explored a little bit. They hadn't found the Dead Sea Scrolls yet, because that was obviously 1940, whatever. But they were doing a lot of digs. And in the digs, they found a thing called the Moabite Stone. And everybody was really anxious about this Moabite Stone. And he realized that there was profit opportunity in making up fake artifacts that he could sell. And he got to the point where people were bidding for his stuff. In fact, it's interesting now because his work has been completely discredited. He hired artisans to make fake material. And it's really fascinating because his material became worthless toward the end of his life. But after he died, it's worth a fortune now. It's worth a fortune now because it's the first real fake artifacts that they were doing in biblical research. He actually fabricated a document. I'll just read this. It says, in 1883, Shapira represented what was known as the Shapira Strips, the supposedly ancient scroll written on leather strips which claimed to be found near the Dead Sea. The Hebrew text hinted at a different version of Deuteronomy and included the 11th commandment. So everybody was really excited about finding out this stuff. The last example I will share with you of fake news that I find really fascinating in this area was the Book of Jasher. So if you've ever studied the apocryphal books, the books that are not in our canonization of the scriptures that we have, there are many books, but the Book of Jasher in particular is an interesting one because the Book of Jasher was written in about the 1100, somewhere between 1000 and 1100 as pure fiction. But apparently at the time, fiction was looked down on. If you were a fiction writer, you had absolutely no credibility. So it was sold as a legitimate book, and a great many people will try to quote the Book of Jasher, thinking they're actually reading something that's historical when it was completely a book of fiction, complete book of fiction. And there are many scholars that talk about that to this day. Fake news goes back, of course, much further than the examples I've just given you. If you're thinking about it for a second, you would have gone just like me to the Book of Genesis, to the first fake news. So why don't we take a look at the first fake news story, and then we're going to find that in Genesis chapter 3. Genesis chapter 3 and in verses 1 through 6. The Bible's full of stories of fake news. Genesis chapter 3. verses 1-6. And now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which the Lord God had made. And he said unto the woman, Yea, hath God said, You shall not eat of every tree of the garden? And the woman said unto the serpent, We may eat of the fruit of the trees of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree in the midst of the garden, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God said, You shall not eat of it, neither shall you touch it, lest you die. And the serpent said unto the woman, You shall not surely die. Here's the fake news. You're not going to die. For God doth know in the day that you eat of it, your eyes shall be opened, and you shall be as gods, knowing good from evil. And when the woman saw the tree was good for food, and that it was pleasant to the eyes, and the tree would be desired to make one wise, she took the fruit and did eat, and it gave unto her husband with her, and he did eat. We know Satan is the author of fake news. That's where it starts from. It starts from there. Let's actually go forward into the New Testament where it says that very specifically. We're going to go over to John. We're going to go to John chapter 8. John chapter 8. It's actually a very fascinating read, especially in preparation. We often read many of the books or many of the verses in John in preparation for the spring holy days. Really a fascinating read through the whole first chapter of John, chapter 8, but we won't read through all of it. We're going to start in verse 43. John chapter 8 and verse 43. Jesus was speaking. He says, Why do you not understand my speech? Even because you cannot hear my word, you are of your father the devil, and the lusts of your father you will do. He was a murderer from the beginning and abode not in the truth because there is no truth in him. When he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. I have to tell you, normally we kind of shy away from the New International Version because it's more of rather than a translation, it's more of a... can't remember the word for it right now, but basically they've interpreted the scriptures a little bit more. But in this particular verse, I found it a really fascinating way that they put it. He says, because, let me get to the part where it says it. It says, when he speaks lies, he speaks his native language. I just love the way he says that. He speaks his native language, for he is a liar and the father of lies. I love the way the NIV, the New International Version, just puts that because it just jumps off of the page. So, why is fake news out there? What is the purpose for it? What do people try, people, Satan, others, why is it being propagated and shared and pushed? What are the purposes behind it? We've touched a little bit on that already when we talked about fake news being for profit. There's a great story of P.T. Barnum. P.T. Barnum, if you remember, was the founder of P.T. Barnum and Bailey, the circus. And he was a man of great many deceptions because he made a ton of money by deceiving people. Apparently, he moved to New York in 1834 and he began his career in show business when he discovered a woman named Joyce Heth. The woman had claimed to be 161 years old and had been a slave and a nurse to George Washington. Heth entertained audiences with stories and songs about the young George Washington and drew a very large crowd because of one of Barnum's handbills proclaimed that she was the first person to put clothes on the unconscious infant who in after days led the heroic fathers on to glory, to victory, and to freedom. P.T. Barnum was a master of telling lies. He was a master of telling lies, and he sparked people's interest. People would come because they just wanted to see. Well, eventually the public interest waned, so he had to turn it up a notch. So ever resourceful, he started spreading rumors that Heth was actually not a person at all, but instead was mechanical automation. One of Barnum's anonymous letters to the newspaper said, Heath Joyce, so he didn't even pay credit for it. He just sent this anonymous letter to the newspaper. And said that Heath Joyce was not a human being at all. What purports to be a remarkably old woman is simply a curiously constructed automation made up of whalebone, Indian rubber, and a number of springs that ingeniously put together to make her move at the slightest touch according to the will of the operator. Boy, now people were much more interested. They were happy to go back and see if they'd been fooled once before, pay the entrance fee, and go back. So as a result of his campaign to discredit Heth, many people revisited the exhibit and determined for themselves whether they'd been duped the first time. While Barnum continued to rake in the cash. Eventually, Heth died, and Barnum cashed in again on the public autopsy performed to determine her actual age when it turned out that she was 80 years old. Barnum declared that he was shocked to find out that he'd been duped. Right? It's amazing how much money plays a role in misinformation. People profit from creating a story and getting people to buy in to that story if they could just believe. Money is at the root cause of a lot of this. Let's take a look at 1 Timothy. You're probably already there with me mentally, but 1 Timothy chapter 6, and let's see what it says about money being at the root cause of a great many evils. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 through 10. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 through 10. But godliness with contentment is great gain. That's a powerful statement by itself. Godliness with contentment is great gain. By itself, can we be content with just godliness without riches, without money? Wow. For we brought nothing into this world, and there certainly can carry nothing out. Anybody here born, clothes on, money in their wallet, right? Anybody hope to take their riches with them and they go, right? It's just not going to happen. That's what he says. And having food and raiment, let it be therewith content. But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows. Money is one of the root causes of fake news, and it's the most common one that we see that's out there, whether it's the folks in Monrovia or the various European countries, or the old stories like Parnum Bailey. But there are other reasons for people disseminating fake news. Why would Satan want to actually give us fake news? Why would Satan want to? Satan loves to create division. He loves to create division in the church in particular. He would love to see nothing more than us being pulled apart by different worldviews, by information that we think is important to us. He knows that he can't do that himself, but he would love to see that happen in the church. And the Messiah actually speaks about that a little bit in Mark chapter 3. So let's go to Mark chapter 3. Mark chapter 3 and verse 25, where Jesus talks about this whole separation. Mark chapter 3 and verse 25. And if a house be divided against itself, that house cannot stand. And if Satan rise up against himself and be divided, he cannot stand, but hath an end. No man can enter into the strong man's house and spoil his goods, except he first bind the strong man, and then the spoil will be of his house. Satan would love nothing more than for us to be divided. And one of the ways he does that is by spreading fake news, lies, misinformation, propaganda from his perspective. I'm just going to go into the next point, really, which is along the same lines of creating division. He's an accuser of the brethren. We know that Satan's an accuser of the brethren. We often read about it that he accuses us to God, but of course he accuses us to each other as well in some of the fake news. And we find a great discussion of that in Revelation chapter 12. And there was a very interesting translation. I'm going to read a different translation called the Hillsborough Christian Standard Bible for this particular translation. But Revelation chapter 12 and verses 9 and 10. Because I just found this to be, again, one of those interesting translations that makes it jump off the page a little bit more for us than the traditional King James does. All right, Revelation 12, 9, and 10. So the great dragon, and I think it's one of the other translations says the giant dragon, the huge dragon, the great dragon, was thrown out. And one of the translations said hurled out. I love that. Just, you know, I mean, not just pushed out of the door, but hurled out. The ancient serpent who is called the devil and Satan, the one who deceives the whole world. Yeah, we know that Satan is the deceiver of the whole world. He was thrown down, his angels with him. And then I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, the salvation and the power of the kingdom of our God and the authority of the Messiah have now come, because the accuser of our brothers has been thrown out, the one who accuses them before God night and day. Satan loves misinformation. He loves misinformation, and he will spread it wherever he can. Absolutely wherever he can. The last point and why this happens, we're going to read kind of a fun story. Satan loves to create doubt and fear. Satan loves to create doubt in our mind and fear. And there's an awesome story of this back when Israel was coming out of Egypt. And let's go back to Numbers 13. We're going to read through Numbers 13 and 14. We'll skip through it. We won't read all of it. But fascinating story. Numbers 13. Remember, Satan is all about creating doubt and fear. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, send men that they may search the land of Canaan, and which I give to the children of Israel. Of every tribe, you will send a man, every one a ruler among them. Now, God told Moses to send some strong men, some rulers, some leaders, but young leaders, young men who were strong leaders from every tribe, not just the average person to go in. Why did God, and he doesn't answer the question, but why do you suppose he wanted to send in these spies to go into Canaan? Was it so they could find out that they were going to be afraid? Or was it to encourage them with all of the bounty that was awaiting for them when they went into the promised land? In my mind, it's clearly the latter and not the former. And so Moses, by the commandment of the Lord, sent them from the wilderness of Paran. All the men were heads of the children of Israel. And then they list the various heads, the various men going. Remember, there's 12 of them. In verse 16, these are the names which Moses sent to spy out the land. And Moses called Hoshea, the son of Nun, Joshua. And Moses sent them to spy out the land of Canaan. And they went. He said, get up this way southward and go into the mountain and see the land, that what it is, the people that dwell in it, and whether they be strong or weak, few or many, that what the land is that they dwell in, and whether it be good or bad, and what cities there be if they dwell in it, or whether there's tents or they're in strongholds, and what the land is, whether it be fat or lean, and whether there be wood therein, and whether and be of good courage. He's telling them, be of good courage and bring the fruit from the land. The time was the time of the first ripe grapes. He's telling them, be of good courage, go there and find out what's going on, and come back and bring us a report. Tell us what's happening. So let's skip down to when they bring back the report. At verse 25, and they returned from searching the land after 40 days, and they went and came to Moses and to Aaron and all the congregation of the children of Israel in the wilderness, Paran and the Kadesh, and brought back word with them and to the, all the congregation, and showed them the fruit of the land. Wow, this fruit was so, the grapes were so heavy they had to be carried on a pole between two people, two strong men. And they told them, and they said, We came into the land where you sent us, and surely it flowed with milk and honey, and this land, and this is the fruit of it. Interesting, a little side point, when I was looking at this, honey is kind of interesting. It's not often, the Hebrew word here could mean syrup from dates and figs. It doesn't always mean honey from bees. And bee honey, they didn't have beekeepers like we have today. So it was considered much more of a luxury. But it could mean honey, but it could also be syrup from all the produce that was growing in the land at the time. Nevertheless, the people are strong that dwell in the land, and the cities are walled and very great. And moreover, we saw the children of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains, and the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of the Jordan. And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, "Let us go up at once and possess it, for we are able to overcome it." Caleb actually understood. He had faith. Remember, they just came out of Egypt. They saw these miracles, miracle after miracle after miracle coming out of Egypt. And Caleb had gotten the message, and he knew they could go into the land of Canaan, they could take it. He and Joshua were the only two. The other 10 men, but the men that went up with him, we were not able to go up. But the men that went up with him said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we." And they brought up an evil report of the land in which they had searched into the children of Israel, saying, "The land through which we have gone to search it, and the land that eats up the inhabitants thereof, and all the people that we saw in it are men of great stature." Some think they were giants, giant men. That's the Amalekites. And they saw giants, the sons of Anak, and which come of the giants, and we were in our own sight as grasshoppers in our own sight. So we had 10 men with an evil report, fake news report, two men who saw what God had expected them to see, a land flowing with milk and honey, waiting for them to go in and take the land. Satan didn't want it. He wanted them to be afraid. The outcome of this story, 10 men died of plagues. You'll find that at the end of chapter 14. Two men lived another 40 years with the rest of it, the rest of their young men, and to wait 40 years to go into the land of Canaan. And a whole generation had to pass away and not see because of a fake news report, because Satan was able to create doubt and fear in the hearts of the people who really had no excuse for being afraid. So how do we avoid being the victim of fake news? How do we avoid being the victim of fake news? You know, sometimes it's not easy. There's lots of fake stuff that's out there. I don't know if you've paid attention to it. There's a huge debate about the flat earth versus the global earth. And if you listen to the arguments, man, they both sound pretty convincing. For every point, there's a counterpoint. You could get really wrapped up in that if you want to. What about climate change? It seems like for every argument, there's another argument, a counter-argument. How do you know? How do you know what's right? Did we land on the moon? You know, there's people who think we didn't, that it was all a fake story, right? And it's amazing the back and forth that goes on about that. How do we avoid being the victim of fake news? Well, I have a three-step plan for us to avoid being the victim of fake news. It's avoid, filter, and test. Avoid, filter, and test. The first point is to avoid. The first point is to avoid. You know, there's a thing called the circle of influence versus the circle of concern. We have concerns about a great many things. We all concerned about everything we see, we feel, we hear, we know. But we don't have the ability to influence everything that's going on around us. What difference does it make if we went to the moon or we didn't go to the moon? What difference does it make if the world's flat versus it's round? Does that impact your day-to-day living? You have a circle of concern, maybe, but does it change your day-to-day life? Your circle of influence are the things that avoid you. So avoid things that are outside of your circle of influence. Don't get wrapped up into things just because there's an argument out there. Don't get drawn into an argument just to get drawn into the argument. You may not need to know everything. There might be surprises left that God will share with you at a later time in the world. Second point, filter. Filter. Know your sources. Where are you hearing information from? Where does the information you're paying attention to come from? It's amazing, but not all sources are trustworthy. In fact, I think that's actually part of the problem. We take a look at our press and we want them to be trustworthy, but they often are not. And we know that there are a great many that are not trustworthy sources. Sometimes I wonder if there are any trustworthy sources outside of this one right here, the one that we carry with us. Everything else is almost always subject to not being trustworthy. It seems like the only credible sources are those is really the Bible. I love there is a fun movie, and if you haven't seen it, it's called Secondhand Lions. I think I owe this back to the Erickson's. I think I borrowed it from them and never gave it back. It's a great story. It is a great story about a little boy who gets dumped off at his great uncle's by his mother, who has got some serious problems. And the little boy has to decide what to believe in life. He needs to decide whether his uncles are crooks that stole a bunch of money from Al Capone, or whether they were war heroes of great men of valor. And he struggles trying to decide what to believe. And the evidence is not clear. It could go either way. There's kind of information that supports both sides. In the end, he has to make up his own mind, and he decides that he's going to believe. He's going to believe that his uncles are great men. And the reason he's going to do that is because it gives him a higher standard to live to. It gives him certain expectations of what he should do with his life. And later in the end of the movie, I won't give it away too much, but he does turn into be a very reputable and strong young man. And he doesn't really find out the truth till the end of the movie. At the very end, he finds out that he was right, that his great uncles were great men. Sometimes we just need to actually believe what's in the Bible and not worry about all of the other stuff that's out there. Socrates actually had what they called the triple filter test, since I'm talking about filtering. He asked a friend of his came up and wanted to tell him something. He says, "Before you tell me, have you confirmed that it's absolutely true?" "Well, no, I haven't really confirmed that it's absolutely true." He says, "Well, okay. But is this good? Is this good information? Is it helpful?" He says, "Well, actually, no, it's really not good." He says, "Well, is it useful?" He says, "Well, it's really not useful." He says, "Then don't tell me. I don't want to know. If it's not true, and it's not good, and it's not useful, maybe I don't need to hear it." You know, Philippians chapter 4 has a similar scripture that supports that. Philippians chapter 4, verses 5 through 8, and I'll just read it because I see I'm running a little short on time. And I want to leave some time for Dusty. So it says, "Let your gentleness be known to all men. The Lord is at hand. Be anxious for nothing, but in everything and by prayer and supplication give thanks. Let your requests be known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and mind through Jesus Christ. Finally, brethren, whatever things be true, whatever things be noble, whatever things be just, whatever things be pure, whatever things be lovely, whatever things be of good report, if there is any virtue and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things." This is the news we need to be hearing, we need to be following. The last point is test. Avoid, filter, test. There is a rather lengthy, and I'm not going to read the entire thing to you here, article from the New Yorker magazine, which talks about, the title is called "Why Facts Don't Change Our Minds." Why Facts Don't Change Our Minds. And they talk about several studies, mostly out of Cambridge University, and where they have proven that people don't pay attention to facts. They just don't. Facts can't seem to change people's minds. I'll quote the article. Says, once formed, researchers observe dryly impressions are remarkably perseverant. They just tend to stay. The Stanford studies became famous coming from a group of academics in the 19th century. The contention that people can't think straight was shocking. It isn't any longer. Thousands of subsequent experiments have confirmed and elaborated on this finding, as everyone who's followed the research or even occasionally picked up a copy of Psychology Today knows. What a graduate student with a clipboard can demonstrate that reasonably seeming people are often totally irrational. Rarely is the insight seemed more relevant than it does right now. People are just irrational. They just refuse to listen to facts. But we don't have to be like that. God asks us to test all things. And there is I'm just going to refer you to the story of the Bereans. What a fascinating story of the Bereans in Acts chapter 17. The first 13 verses of Acts chapter 17. Paul goes to the city of the Thessalonians and runs into nearly a lynch mob, almost tries to kill him because he's preaching Jesus Christ. He gets out of there by the skin of his teeth. He goes to the city of Berea. The Bereans listen and they test. They go back and they look in the scriptures to say, are these facts true? Are they right? And they were. And they were willing to accept that there was good evidence supporting what Paul was saying. We need to be like the Bereans. We need to test the news that we're hearing to see if it's actually true, if it is just, if it's right. So, avoid, filter, and test. Avoid, filter, and test. Wrapping it up, fake news is not new. It's been around for a long time. It comes in many different varieties. Fake news is very harmful to us. Satan loves to disseminate fake news because he tries to create doubt and division. He wants us to be, like I said, doubtful of God, doubtful of what God can do in our lives, and division amongst the church of God. But we can combat fake news. We can combat it by doing what I said, by avoiding fake news, by filtering it, and by testing it. You know, I'll leave you with one little anonymous poem. As we all get bombarded by news stories on a regular basis. And the little poem says, two natures beat within my breast. One is foul, the one is blessed. The one I love, the one I hate, the one I feed will dominate.